Welcome, everybody, to the Tuesday, July 19th, 2022 meeting of the Strategic Planning Committee of the Pacifica National Board. My name is Jim Dingman. I'm the pro tem chair of the committee, and I call it to order. First of all, let me take the roll call. I'm going to start with Jim Sagerton. Are you here? Jim? All right, let me keep going. Julie Hewitt asked for an excused absence. She sent me an email earlier. Stephanie Wells, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Susan Young?
Yes, here.
Thank you. Julia Kennard?
Here.
Are you here? Thank you.
Yes.
Donna Grimes? I don't see her here. We'll have to handle that. Elizabeth Van Gunten. Are you here,
yes.
Elizabeth? Thank you.
Yeah.
Alex Steinberg.
I'm here.
Chris Corey.
I'm here, Jim.
Lyndon Foley.
Here.
Ms. Polina. He's not here. We know that. Jim McFadden.
I'm here.
Heather Gray.
Here.
And myself, I'm here. So we have quorum. I wanted to make
James Sagerton is here as well.
Thank you, Jim. I wanted to make a motion to excuse all the folks that aren't here. Julia, Polina, and Donna. Donna, I don't believe.
Jim?
Yeah.
We do not excuse in committee meetings. Long tradition at Pacifica.
Well, all right. Thank you, Alex. I know that Julia is having dinner. Donna may not even know about this, and Polina is teaching. So anyway, I just want to make that clear.
And just to clarify, yeah. Julie is not there. Julia is here.
Thank you. Now, I wanted to get to the next item on the agenda, which is election of officers. We have two spots, or maybe three if we want. We have the chair of this committee, the secretary of the committee. If we want a vice chair, I don't know if we want that, but we could. So who wants to be nominated for chair?
I'll nominate Jim Dingman.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Anybody else want to be nominated for chair? All right. So there's no other nominations for chair. I thank you, and let's move on. Do we need a vice chair?
No.
We don't. Okay. Do we need a secretary?
Yes.
All right. Who wants to do that? Don't overwhelm me. Anybody? Going once, going twice? All right. So nobody wants to be the secretary. Okay. All right. Well, I will need help if I'm then put upon that task for the time being. Now we need timekeepers. Who would volunteer to be a timekeeper tonight?
Didn't Jim Sagerton say we don't need timekeepers for a committee?
Correct.
All right.
There's a special provision. The PMB passed a special policy that you can have timekeepers, but normally you don't.
All right. Okay. Well, then obviously everybody has to, you know, use common sense and be reasonable. Now, approval of minutes. I sent out two copies of minutes to people earlier. Two of them were sent by a version of Word that people don't have. So I sent them out in a different form in an email. They had to do with the meetings in June and earlier this month. Does anybody have any Can I make a motion to approve those minutes? All right.
Second.
All right. Second. Hearing no objection, they're passed. Now, let's talk about the agenda. I have an agenda here. Who else wanted to revise or add to the agenda? Let me read out the agenda for those who are not present. The agenda as it's written would have a briefing by Julie and Stephanie on the present fiscal situation, 10 minutes. This is a report on the National Fundraising Task Force and lessons learned from July 5th and 6th. Stephanie and all of us would participate in that. That was something we talked about in executive session, and this is now to be an open discussion with everybody participating. Then we have on here report of the program committee, news initiative, and I wanted to Heather to talk about that and also bring in some other aspects of that problem, that is public affairs, Spanish language, music, and arts programming. And then an update on underwriting and a need for national meeting on this with all the players involved. And Alex and Lyndon and Chris would talk about the work that they've done for several years. I know there's other people on this committee who've also worked on this, Beth and others. So the whole point would be to get them all together and then do what we've done with the task force, National Fundraising Task Force, and then get that underway. Is there anybody, does anybody want to talk about something else or make modifications to the agenda?
Chair, I just have one note.
What?
It's come to my attention that items have been placed on the agenda regarding reports from individuals who aren't always contacted prior to them appearing on the agenda. So I would hope that the chair could make sure they contact the person who's going to be asked for a report and make sure that they're on notice for that and that they agree and they're ready.
All right, fair point, although this was sent a few days ago, but fair point, Jim. Any other modifications to the agenda? All right, hearing none, and new businesses, five, et cetera. So let's move to the – and we have the public involved here. There's a number of people here. Let's just first get to this first, the briefing by Julia and Stephanie on the present fiscal situation. Take it away, guys.
All right, Julia. Stephanie, do you want me to start out with a little bit of the cash update? Or?
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. Thank you.
Okay, sorry. I guess we should have talked about that beforehand.
No problem.
Yeah, not really a lot has changed. Pretty much we are still struggling in the cash situation. Just to kind of keep things brief, though, I would like to say that there are two stations right now that are, I would say, are in my questionable as to being able to make payroll next week and fund their health insurance, and that's WBAI and KPFT. KPFT does have $42,000 in cash, but it's all restricted. It's from a major donor supporting work related to, I think, a tower and some programming associated with that. They're doing some work with supporting the women's prison nearby, and it's a combination of things related to equipment for a tower and setting up something that would allow the station to, I guess, run or programming out to the prison. So although their payroll is not that large, currently they do not have any non-restricted or unrestricted cash. Their accounts payable that's outstanding, I think it's about $25,000. I forgot to add it to my notes, but I'm pretty sure that was the number that I recalled. WBAI has about $5,000 in cash today. They raised about $38,000 this month so far. I was looking at that today. That is 90, going off of the website, it's about 90% collected. I think that we probably will have a couple thousand hit tomorrow, though, the bank. But typically, you know, they can have a couple thousand dollars a day coming in, depending on what's going on. But, there's potential that they could make it, but it's going to be close. And of course, they do have a good bit of payables that are outstanding. The main ones are a few months of the tower rent, 3 months of the tower rent, I believe 2 months of office rent, and then several months with the call center are past due. But I think the general manager has a relationship with them that they allow him to make smaller payments as he can. KPFK, from what I hear, I was a little concerned, but I heard today or yesterday that a prior donor who has given them a couple of large gifts this year has agreed to give them another large gift, and they might have actually done that yesterday. Hasn't hit the bank yet, but with that and knowing what their sustainer deposits are going to be next week, they should be able to make payroll and help, but not be able to pay any of their payables. And, you know, the archives, you know, I think everybody knows, we had the national fund drive, and they should have received about $27,000, I think, deposited over the past couple of days from that. So they'll be okay for right now. The issue that we have with the archives, though, is the air conditioning that is going to be very expensive to replace. I cannot remember what the number was, but it's a lot. And it's not the actual archives, but it's the office space of the archives.
So far, that bill is the lowest bids we've received so far is $18,000.
Right. But at least the $22,000 will give them a couple of months breathing room to get through their typically, you know, payables and pay and then their payroll. They still only have two stations that are consistently paying their central services. So, you know, I think we'll be kind of back in that situation in a few months with the archives, unless. You know, if we can get them to November, I believe it was November, Stephanie, that's their regularly scheduled fund drive.
Yes, it is.
So hopefully that's still in the plans. The national office has about $50,000 in cash right now, with and that's adjusted, you know, me backing out the funds for payroll in their health insurance. The accounts payable, the age payables is $270,000. Dollars for the national office. Of course, the main components, the majority of that is made up of 5 things. Almost 100,000 of it is legal invoices that are the majority of which are over 90 days. 50,000 to the fundraising software that's a couple of years old. 30,000 for accounting services, 30,000 for NPR, and then 35,000 for the auditor. So it's fairly large chunks to, you know, a small number of vendors. Let's see. What else? Hopefully, you know, I believe that August is the typical time for a next round of fund drives. I haven't been able to catch up with anyone on that, but I know in the past when I've spoken, I'm pretty sure that WPFW, KPFT, and KPFK would normally have an August fund drive. KPFK is going to be having at least a, hopefully more, but at least a one-day drive in August to celebrate their 63rd anniversary. I think they're putting some programming together and trying to do some exciting stuff for that to raise $63,000 for that day, which would be tremendous. I think that's mostly the main talking points for cash. Are there any questions for that, or we can move on? Stephanie can go into some things she's been working on.
Yeah, let me let Stephanie on, then we'll take questions. Go on, Steph.
Julia's covered pretty much everything. I mean, one of the things we look at pretty much every single day is cash in the bank, cash coming in, and what bills we need to pay and what past due payables we need to try to extend for a while. So that, again, is pretty much something that we're looking at all the time. And then we're sharing those numbers as well, of course, with the general managers and the staff that need to know at the local stations, as well as certain directors and financial committee members also. KPFK, as you said, yes, is planning a fund drive to celebrate their 63rd anniversary on the air. I believe that's going to be July 26th, and they're hoping to raise $63,000. There isn't a giveaway for that item, for that fund drive. It's just really encouraging people to donate. They are thinking they may have a few giveaways that would be logoed, items, but that's still something that they're trying to continue to work out. We are, again, trying to also deal with some of the mechanical or building issues that are happening at KPFK. Again, the air conditioning that's within the offices at the archives, as well as the air conditioning within the KPFK building itself. There's some air conditioning and maintenance issues at the tower that need to be looked at. And there's still also plumbing issues that are at KPFK that we need to work out. And I think financially, that is pretty much all that I will cover at this point, but I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay, so you all just raise your hands and we'll do it in order, putting the people who are on the call here. Go on, Susan, you started off.
Yeah, just a quick question. I know that Arthur Schwartz has very graciously said that a substantial portion of the legal, the pending legal bills are his. Is there any, and that he would be, he wouldn't be pushing hard on getting paid. Do we have a breakdown on how much of that is owed to Arthur?
$65,000.
Okay.
Really $70,000 if we include his $5,000 retainer for this month. I just haven't recorded that yet. So really $70,000.
So there's both the retainer and billings in addition to the retainer. Is that correct?
Right. He doesn't always send the retainer. Sometimes we just record what's billable. For example, I won't go into too much, but if we go several months with some of the attorneys and we're not able to pay anything, what I'll do is I'll go in and I'll reverse the retainers that we haven't paid and just pay the invoices that are for the actual work. And I just swap them out. I'm not sure if that makes sense, but right now he is owed about $70,000.
Okay, Susan?
Yes, thank you.
All right, Jim McFadden.
yes, I had a couple questions. First, does the $27K include the $5K that was pledged by the PNB members?
No, it does not.
Okay, so that's the $27K is what I thought I remember hearing, a $31K. So we, 90% must be come in then.
Well, right. Those are the credit card payments that have been received, is my understanding. It's right at $27,000.
Right. And can you give a rough breakdown of, by station, how much of that $27K came from each station?
I do not have that information, but I will see what I can get from the gentleman who runs the report.
Yeah, I guess that's sort of necessary if that's going to be used to offset some of the essential services.
Yep, and, I agree.
And the air conditioning, now, is that something that Archive is going to pay, or is it something that KPFK is going to pay for the new air conditioning?
Well, neither one of them have the funding right now to pay that, so that's the problem. It's not even of who's going to pay for it. They don't have the money. Neither one of them has it, so.
Okay. All right.
Technically, if they did, the Archives would pay for the Archives area air conditioning, and KPFK would pay for the KPFK air conditioning and the tower air conditioning.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Susan, is your hand up again?
No.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? to the folks. This includes the people on the call. Anybody have a question to Julie and Stephanie on any of this? I'm going to put myself on the stack. And the issue of the air conditioning with the archives, we're talking about the office itself. What is the state of the air conditioning where the tapes are? Does that need to be replaced also?
To my knowledge, that does not need to be replaced. That seems to be working fine. Thankfully, you know, that is working okay. It's just the offices. If there is ever an issue with the vault air conditioning, a lot of the archive material is also being held in an air-conditioned storage facility. So worst case, we could always make that effort to transport some of the materials over into the air-conditioning public storage space.
Okay, thank you, Stephanie. Does anybody else have any questions for Julian and Stephanie on this particular part?
This is Lyndon. I have a question.
Go on, Lyndon.
The air conditioning for the tower, is it on the verge of going out, and if it does go out, how does that affect the transmission?
Stephanie, you want to take that, or you want me to answer that?
I'm looking up. This was kind of new news over the last few weeks for us, so I was going to pull up an email that kind of explains it possibly a little bit better.
Put it in there. The very short version is it would be very bad. And that replacement was not that much. Isn't that the one that was only around $1,000, Stephanie?
I believe so. It was just a few thousand. Yeah.
Yeah, it was more of a repair situation. And it was, we told them to go forth and figure it out because, one of the employees is working with the company to get that work done. And he was told to move forward with that last week because the expense relative to replacing an entire unit or burning up the tower was nothing. So relatively speaking, so he's been told to move forward with that.
Thank you.
Is it the control room, Stephanie? Now that one, I believe, is more of a $3,500, $4,000 issue that they're getting quotes on.
Oh, okay, that's good.
So they're really three air conditioning.
Three separate air conditioning issues, yeah.
All right, any other questions to Stephanie and Julia or anybody else? Going once, going twice. All right, let's move on to the next item. This is a report on the National Fundraising Task Force and lessons learned from the July 5th and 6th fundraiser. Stephanie, I guess you need to talk about that.
Yes, I'll just do a recap. For those that may not fill everybody in, there was a national fund drive that took place on July 5th and July 6th from Pacific time, 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. And the special appeal or the focus of this fund drive was really for the Pacifica Radio Archives. And the Pacifica Radio Archives was chosen based upon discussions that we had had here in the Strategic Planning Committee and because of kind of the immediate financial need that they had at that time in order to meet their payroll. The premium that was used was their 64 gigabyte USB drive that's called Voices That Change the World, and that was given as a gift for any $250 donation. As we kind of touched on, the total amount raised for the event was $31,865, and we had $26,502 that came in through the call center, and then we had $5,363 that came through via the website. On average, there were of the blocks of programming, I'll just kind of run through the shows or the programs that were the highest fundraisers, and Margaret Prescott's show or program did well both days. Mark Torres, the manager, the director of the archives, was also pitching with Christina Blosdale, and they raised money as well for the both days. Mitch Jesserich and Mark Torres pitched also. They raised, they were high top, you know, fundraisers for the first day. WBAI and WPFW had a special two-part women's program, and part one raised quite a bit of money for them as well. There was a George Floyd anniversary, part one and part two on day one, that raised significant money. I mean, significant meaning, you know, $2,000 and $1,300. And then there was a George Floyd anniversary, part one, day two, that also raised money. Day two, part two, didn't. Democracy Now! Raised a little bit of money, and then a repeat of Democracy Now! On the second day also raised $1,000. So as we had mentioned earlier, the archives usually have an annually scheduled fund drive for one day in November. They had one in November of 2021, and that was a 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. fundraiser, and that one raised $63,000. And then due to, again, the lack of archive central services that have that are being paid, the archives also held an emergency fund drive on April 22nd, 2022, from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they raised $41,000 with that. So as you can see, there was, you know, somewhat of a significant dip from $63,000 for one day in November, $41,000 for one day in April, and then $31,000 for 2 days in July. So as we kind of looked at the fund drive and talked to the people that were involved and just kind of debriefed from it, of course, all of us were very quick to admit that the drive was very slow. It didn't raise as much as was anticipated. They were hoping for at least $100,000. One of the things that we determined, and this was even discussed prior to the event, is that the premium that was offered, which was the Voices That Changed the World 64 gigabyte USB drive, has been overused, and it has been used too often throughout the network in general, as well as it's been the premium that's been used for the other two archive fund drives that were in November and then in April. So we definitely know that moving forward, we need to create a new premium or multiple premiums at varying prices. So there's more opportunity for people to participate and make a donation rather than just the 250, as well as making some that may be higher than 250, but just giving people options for that. Another thing that was determined is that summer drives usually don't go that well. Although we have fund drives that are scheduled to begin across the network at a lot of stations in August. So I don't know if maybe August isn't really considered summer or historically if that has gone well, but we were told that really late June and July, particularly July, fund drives don't do extremely well. The days that this was held was one day after a three-day holiday. So people felt that that too was also a detriment in getting people involved because they might still kind of been on holiday brain when they came back to the stations. A lot of the stations had just concluded their own fund drives. You know, for example, it was 2 days after KPFK had had a 30-day drive, which had been followed by another 30-day drive. So they pretty much had been continuous drive mode. And according to the archives, historically, KPFK is actually the best fundraising demographic for the archives. So they didn't do as well as KPFK has historically in raising funds for the archives. We also realized that we need to do better outreach and marketing, maybe not something that is one tone specific for the fund drive, but to try to make sure that we are creating images and marketing materials that are geared toward the demographics of the stations across the network, as well as the national demographic as well. And that includes trying to get a better grasp on who's managing the social media and the websites and making sure that we do have a consistent message, but also that that message is continually put out through all those sources. And a lot of that is by providing each of the stations with better training and scripts and talking points for their programmers so they can kind of get a better grasp and a more consistent grasp on the message that we're trying to make. We also need to have some better talking points with the call center. We gave them everything that was needed, but there did seem to be some confusion from the call center side when people called up to say that, you know, there isn't a fund drive going on right now. So that's something that they're, you know, working on with the call center to see what the problem was with that. What we also want to do as we move forward with future drives is to make sure that we plan those future drives out, that we create, you know, the theme, develop those premiums, make task lists, et cetera, and assign those to the staff with greater advance notice so they can make sure that they can be prepared to add this additional fund drive activity to their regularly scheduled fund drives for the stations. And then again, we want to make sure as follow-up that once the fund drive is over, the fund drive may be over on air, but the task itself of the fund drive is not over. So we need to make sure that all the accounting is done in a timely manner, that money is transferred as needed in a timely manner, and that our premiums are delivered to our donors in a timely manner, and that we also have follow-up with those donors thanking them. Does anybody have any questions?
This is James. This is Alex.
Go on. Yeah, Jim, go on.
Yeah, thank you, Stephanie. Once again, that was an excellent report. You really seem to have gotten all of the information together, and you presented it very succinctly and concisely, and I appreciate that, especially the fact that you seem to have incorporated a lot of the analysis that came from different corners into the report, making it very comprehensive. I appreciate that. That's all.
Thank you.
Alex.
Yes, Stephanie. Yeah, I also appreciated the fact that you gave a report that was the product of a lot of analysis of what was done right and what was not done right with this fund drive. But I have one issue here. Much of what you discussed in your analysis were issues that we had already pinpointed when we were planning the fund drive on this committee. We actually did make note about we could use fresh premiums. We talked about the fund drives having a theme. Many suggestions were entertained, and I thought we were going to do the fund drive on that basis, but it wasn't done on that basis. So that's a problem. I'd actually be more comfortable discussing some of this in closed session, but anyway. I think that national fund drives have potential to raise some significant money, but I don't think that the fact that this one was a big disappointment should color our opinion about national fund drives because of the various problems in the way this one was implemented. So, again, I appreciate that you went through all the points in the analysis and why it was a disappointing result. But I think we have to make sure it doesn't, well, number one, make sure it doesn't happen again. And perhaps part of the problem that was unavoidable was that we had to put this together in a very short period of time. I understand that. So next time we do it, we have to plan well in advance. Thank you.
Any comments, Steph? Stephanie?
Yeah, I completely agree. Is that there was a lot of, and this was things that the staff brought up as well, and even when we were discussing it with the staff when it first started, is that it was a very short turnaround, and it was the process of planning it and organizing it was being done at the exact same time that all the, you know, many of the other stations were already in a fund drive. So it was kind of planning two fund drives at the same time. So one would end and then within 24 hours, another one would start after a long holiday weekend. We also had some unexpected things that popped up, even just kind of figuring out, are we going to do 24 hours of programming for 2 days? Are we going to do half the day? Are we going to cut it, you know, from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m.? So there was a lot of sort of going back and forth as to what hours would work, what hours would not, and how we could put that across. We also had at some of the last minute some issues with the phone banks. The air conditioning went out at the at the archives office, and so there wasn't any way that they could take calls in there. I mean, just the other day it was close to 97 degrees in there. So we kind of, but literally on the Thursday prior to the long weekend, we were just trying to figure out what phone banking system we could use. So thankfully, you know, WBAI came through and we were kind of working that out over the weekend, literally just moments before the whole thing started. So yeah, there were a lot of issues that we did discuss as the group in this group that we needed to address. And it just wasn't really a timely manner to try to get a lot of those things addressed as quickly as we could, especially just creating a new premium.
All right. Thank you, Stephanie. Any other comments to Stephanie on this from anybody? Anybody want to ask a question on this?
I have one, but I'll defer to anyone else who wants to speak first.
Looks like, is that you, Elizabeth?
Yes. I this has already been touched on, but I just want to say I think it's amazing they did as much as they did, given how little time they were given to pull it together. I mean, this was thrown at staff nationwide with very little notice, and they managed to pull it together. I'm not surprised that it didn't do any better than it did. I think that if we want a better result, we need those who require it of staff need to be better on our own account in terms of planning and foresight. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Jim McFadden.
I just want to thank Stephanie for getting this done on short turnaround. And then I also wanted to just ask, since we know we need a new premium, has somebody been assigned to start putting that together?
The archives is taking a look at what we have available and then what needs to be put together. So, yeah, they are actually taking a look at that. And that would be the responsibility of the archives staff to be able to edit that and put it together.
Okay.
Right. That, then we just don't have to deal with this. When, you know, the next time it comes around, we'll have the process, a new premium ready to go. That's great.
Correct.
Any other comments to Stephanie on this?
Oh, somebody did put in the chat regarding why wasn't the result announced at the Pacifica homepage, basic info such as target, total pledge, and cash received. And, you know, I completely agree. A lot of fund drives that you do like this, we need to have, you know, your typical thermometers that are up there on, you know, usually on social media, because it's a lot quicker to be able to put that up there and continually make those pitches. So, I mean, one of the things that I would like to do as we move forward with this is, again, once try to get a grasp, because I'm really not too sure who manages what social media. Some of them are updated sporadically. Some of them aren't updated at all. There isn't a consistent messaging or branding that is going across. But when there are national drives like this, you know, this is when you also have your Facebook fundraising pages and, again, your thermometers, and you're doing live live update saying, you know, we have $5,000 more to go, that kind of thing. So there is a lot of additional planning that needs to take place, and a lot of that planning that needs to take place with what is just basic structure of a fund drive. We still have a lot of pre-work to do. And, you know, as I said, just figuring out who manages all the different social media sites and make sure that we have consistent messaging. And particularly with a national fund drive like this, we would need one person that has access to uploading to every site, I mean, every social media page, rather than trying to send out updated thermometers to multiple people to try to get everything, you know, put online at the same time. So, you know, there is a lot of back-end work that needs to be done prior to us moving forward. Well, we'll still move forward, but prior to us being able to do everything that one would expect would happen in a national fund drive.
I see the dog agrees too. And let me just read these little things in the chat here. Max, do you want to say this to everybody here? I'll just read this. About this two-day national drive, why isn't the result announced at the Pacifica homepage? Basic info such as target, total pledge, and cash received. The organization needs to communicate with the listeners and be transparent in support performance. In the word, to not be autistic, the listener should be treated as a mere cash cow. This is Public Comms 101. Why does Pacifica National Management choose to violate this well-known principle? It makes no sense. And another person responds, desperation, lack of organization. Feel free to ask Mass. They won't respond to chat. The latest news on the Pacifica site is 2015, 7 years ago. Why does the national manager allow this? And then call in user 4, that's the trouble of using a call center. I need to send you stuff about marketing. Ours is almost non-existent. I'm going to put myself on the stack. The reason why this was organized, and everybody, I think, and I agree with everybody's comments about Stephanie making a good report, including all the after-action criticisms that we made so we can do better next time, was we were confronted with a situation where the archives was basically unable to make its payroll. So we immediately responded to that to try to fill the gap. And all the comments made how we have to prepare next time to do better, right on. And I agree with these comments here. Somebody's identifying this person. I'll just respect their anonymity. That was the reason it was done like this. And obviously, the thing I have to ask you, Stephanie, is part of what we discussed was to make sure that we would do this in the future better and lessons learned, et cetera. Are the folks who were involved in helping you putting this together, are they still working together and thinking about future target dates to do this even in a more effective fashion?
Yes, pretty much everyone that was part of the original group is willing to, you know, help again. The archives may not want to take as heavy of a lead as they did with this, and we will then pass that lead role on to someone else. But everyone worked well together and are happy to continue.
All right, thank you. Any other comments for Stephanie on this matter?
Yeah, James.
Go on, James.
Unless there's somebody who hasn't spoken yet.
I don't see anybody clamoring.
Okay. Stephanie, on that last point, I know that there are some stations that are anxious to take a lead on the next national fund drive. So that's good to hear that we'll be shifting the focus there on who's taking the lead. The main thing I wanted to ask about is, what about the next one? You have mentioned in the past, possibly in a normal period, doing these maybe four times a year, which I think sounds about right to me. But right now we're in a cash flow crisis, and I hope we are considering ramping that up a bit. Your proposal was, in a time when we're not in a crisis, four times a year would be appropriate. I'm just going to say again, I think we need to do that more now because we are in such a cash flow crisis. So I hope we're going to be going forward and planning to do this again with all the recommendations for how to improve it included. And I also hope that we can get, in speaking of the premiums that we can offer, I hope that we can get premiums that are directly related to the programs that were being offered. I know in the WBAI segment, WBAI, WPFW segment, they were talking about women's rights, and they were talking about Roe versus Wade and other things. And yet the premium seemed sort of unrelated. And they had some premiums that were ready to go that were more directly related. I hope we can do that. Maybe even differentiating for the different stations and allowing them to pitch things that they know would be successful in their own area. I don't know if that's feasible technically. And so that's all I have for now. Thank you.
All right. Any other comments about
this? I'd like to hear Stephanie, if she has a response
Sure, go on.
We're going to do this four times a year, whether we can ramp that up and expect another one sooner than 3 months from now, given the cash flow crisis.
I'm hoping, but as I said, we have groups that are starting their fund drive in August. So do we then, kind of cut into, and this is one thing that we've been talking about as far as scheduling, if we have, July that's going on now, it's almost done in a couple of weeks. Another, fund drive season will start in August. Do we cut away from a fund drive that's already existing in order to throw in something that's national? Do we then wait until August is over, wait a couple of days, and then do another one in September? Do we have other fund drives that are then scheduled in November? We have one day that's just for the archives. So a lot of it is just kind of calendar and scheduling. And trying to figure out what works best at each station without even just these 2 days. There was a lot of pushback from different stations or programmers at stations that didn't want their programs pushed off yet once again for a fund drive. So there's a lot of schedule. I'm not saying it's not impossible to do, but there is scheduling that we need to take into consideration for that. And then as far as creating the premiums, yes, it is most likely will be pulled from archival material, but will it be the complete responsibility of the archives to create these premiums, or are we going to then provide the materials to each station, and then the station will be responsible for creating those premiums? So those are things that would have to, be considered moving forward. And then for the people that are creating those premiums, the costs that are associated with those premiums, is that then billed back to the archives if they're creating it, as well as copying of those premiums, and the station pay for that? Or if it's a national fund drive, is the payment of developing those premiums and then shipping them and copying them and that kind of thing fall in the national office? So these are all little things that aren't little in the world of putting something like this together, but they are often overlooked when it's, said, oh, let's put on a fund drive in a week. There's a lot of little moving parts that need to be taken into consideration. And again, not that we won't take those into consideration, but we do need to think of those before we start rolling that out. So yeah, it would be nice to be able to, if I would love to see premiums that have some sort of, specificity to the area that they're being pitched, and they have, some sort of tie-in to the programming. But again, that's kind of making sure, and we can do it, but with ample planning, and to make sure that people are assigned the tasks that need to be assigned, and they can continue to do that work in addition to the work that they're already doing. And I know they understand the importance of it. And then also at the same time, we're talking about staff reduction in hours. So we also have to take into consideration ample and productive use of everyone's time.
All right. Thank you, Stephanie. Jim, you have any more on that?
I just would like to suggest one response, and that is one of the reasons that we're forced to do this national fundraising, even though national fundraising is generally a good idea, is because several of the stations are not able to pay their central services. And so I hope that's taken into account, that we're forced to do this by the lack of revenue that's coming in for many of the programs on the stations during regular time, and that pushback from programs that don't bring any revenue in, claiming priority for their airtime and not wanting to be preempted again. I hope that doesn't carry too much weight in a cash flow crisis.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Call on user four.
Hey, around KPFK, there's been some talk about having possibly a 1-day or a 2-day national fund drive, I mean network-wide fund drive. I don't mean just for national, but there would have to be a little planning about what was the priority to get the money and at KPFK, it's the electric bill and the transmitter electric bill, and of course there's the elections. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Stephanie, any reaction to that?
There is, if the discussion that you're referring to might not be the same one that we're aware of, but we are planning a 1-day fund drive to celebrate the 63rd anniversary of KPFK being on the air, and that would be held 1 day only, July 26th, and the goal would be to raise $63,000. So everything that is coming in as far as a fund drive, we're trying not to have any sort of restricted funds, because we want to make sure that any money that does come in is used for those past due payables that are so vitally necessary for the day-to-day operation of the station, which you were completely correct in that our electric bills and our utility bills, both at the station and at the tower. So we hope that we'll be able to get that fund drive off, and KPFK will be able to raise the money that they need, and we'll be able to have some money that's set aside so we can guarantee that we can make those payments.
Thank you, Stephanie. Chris.
Is that national?
Sorry, go on. Go on, Sue. Go on.
To my knowledge, it wouldn't be a national drive. To my knowledge, at this point, it's just being looked at as a day of fundraising by KPFK for KPFK.
Okay. Thank you, Colin User 4. Chris.
Thanks, Jim. So this is a more general question, but since we seem to be on the subject of fundraising, I spent the last few years on the NFC kind of watching the finances of the company. And one of the things that I've noticed is that during the entire coronavirus period, although everyone expected a deep decline in revenues, that actually didn't take place, at least in terms of listener revenues. Now, in terms of bequests and large donor revenues, that definitely declined, but listener revenues were actually fairly flat during that entire period. However, since this year began, I've been noticing kind of a precipitous drop-off in listener revenues, and I'm really concerned about that. I'm worried, and I'm sure that this worry is shared by the management of Pacifica, but I'm not just here to express worry. I just don't understand. You know, I mean, my thought was that as we came out of the pandemic, that listener revenues would increase because, you know, people would be back at work and their quasi normal life, whatever we're calling normal these days, would have been back. And that would include listening to radio. And I just don't understand why this year our listener revenues are off so much. And I'm wondering if this discussion has taken place with any of the managers at the stations. And if so, if there's any explanation for why this is happening, because, like I say, I'm concerned and understanding would ease that concern. I'm sure I'm not alone in being concerned. So thank you if you have any explanation for that.
Can I speak on that?
Yeah, speak on that then as Stephanie, please respond. Go on, Alex.
Okay, it's just a guess on my part. I haven't done any surveys or anything like that. But I think what happened was during the pandemic, as you recall, we got lots of government subsidies. A lot of people were helped through those subsidies, a PPP program, various raises in unemployment, one-time checks from the Treasury Department. It didn't completely make everyone whole, but it helped. And what happened since the last year, almost all those subsidies have disappeared. And contrary to what a lot of people think, a lot of people who lost their jobs during the pandemic have not returned to the workforce. So I think probably more people are suffering now than were in 2020 or 2021. That's just my guess, but that's what I think is part of what's going on here.
All right. Stephanie, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, Chris was absolutely correct. I mean, as we look through just the donor database at KPFK, for example, people did kind of realize that, you know, oh, maybe KPFK took a big hit during COVID, but actually during that time, when we look through our donor lists in our donor database during COVID, KPFK had about 10,000 active donors. And just pulling a recent, the past couple months donor list, there was only 5,803 donors who had made a gift of at least $25 in the past year. So a lot of those, nothing really has been done to sort of follow up with where is that, you know, what happened to those other donors. And one of the things that we have been trying to stress in general to all of the stations is that you need to keep looking at the database. You know, people don't like often working with databases, but it's, you know, garbage in, garbage out. If you don't keep your database clean and updated, then you you don't wait until you've gone from 10,000 to 5,000 donors and wonder, I wonder what happened. So we need to keep looking in our database, keeping it clean, making good lists, and, you know, running reports that we can
cultivate any of those lapsed donors and kind of ask them, what happened? Why did you drop off? What would you like to see on the station? What can we do to make our stations better? You know, and then we're researching those donors. We're turning them into prospects. We're cultivating them with phone calls and inviting them to listener reports on the air. We then make our asks, we store them, and then we start the whole thing over again. You know, so we're putting them through this pipeline to make them become, to help them become the listeners that we want. And also we need to really take a serious look at this membership gift of a donation of $25. That's extremely low if we're supposed to rely on being a listener-based community radio, listener-supported radio station, when out of the people that make gifts and pledges and monthly sustainers, I believe it's only about 80% of those gifts that actually do come through. So we have to, when we're making our budgets looking forward for our next fiscal year, we have to realistically take a look at how many donors do we need, how many members do we need, taking into consideration that it's just $25 and taking into consideration that only 80% of that is going to come through. How many donors are we going to need to generate the revenue that we need to sustain ourselves going forward? And if we need to take a look at increasing what that $25, then the board needs to make an effort to do that. If we need to figure out what we need to do to diversify our revenue stream, we need to do that, because working with the model that we're doing of just donors only or members only and listeners only at $25 is not sustaining us. And obviously we can see that with the financial issues that we're in.
All right.
Jim, I have a follow-up question, if you don't mind.
Go on, Chris.
Yeah. So I've heard this quite a bit from Stephanie, and I agree with it. I mean, I'm glad it's being repeated because it all makes sense to me. My follow-up question is, do we have the buy-in from the individual stations, A, and B, the personnel needed to actually carry out those strategic initiatives? That's it. Thank you.
Go on, Stephanie.
We definitely have support from the staff. I mean, staff, there's no pushback from the staff. I mean, one of the things I think that people need to and I'm not pointing this at you, Chris, at all, but just in general, one of the things that I think people need to realize is that the staff, whether they're volunteer staff or paid staff, is that this is their job. This is their livelihood. This is what they do. And they will do everything they possibly can, just like anyone would in any sort of job, to keep that job.
Alex, can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to comment about the KPFK situation, because that's kind of a special and unique situation. I don't think we've ever in the history of Pacifica seen a membership crash so badly as at KPFK in less than a year. They lost something like 40% of their membership, or it's getting close to 50%, I think. And the reason for that are not purely economic, but they are, to a large extent, what we would call political. KPFA membership crashed to a large extent because some of the producers, some of the more popular producers of KPFK, began to essentially sabotage the station and told the listeners that all sorts of terrible things about management and the station, and basically turned them away from KPFK. And I blame them for that. I think they have a big responsibility for that. It's unprecedented. I mean, membership generally is not that unstable. It may go up 10% or down 10% from one year to the next, but I've never heard of any station's membership going down by 40%. That's just unprecedented.
Stephanie, do you want to react to that?
Yeah, and I don't know if I was muted prior. I was talking, and then I looked down, and my things hit mute. So I don't know if I actually replied. I was talking away, replying to Chris, and I think I might have been muted.
The dog jumped up and hit the button.
I know. I moved in another room, so you don't have to hear my dog barking. But what I was saying, as far as Chris, you guys didn't hear me prior, was that, you know, the staff has full support. There's full support of the staff to do what's needed to do to generate the revenue and support what's needed to be done to reach out to the donors and reach out to our membership and ask, you know, what happened when they were lapsed, what needed to, you know, what do we need to do to bring you back? Is it, are they want to do it, but, you know, many staff members also have, they're not taking that initiative to reach out and clean out that donor database. And I know that there's, any, you know, they see the facts, they pull the records, but then when the actual work comes to it, it's like, now we need to really start moving forward and reaching out to these people and talking and figuring out what needs to be done. Because the staff, I mean, they're 100% as supportive of Pacifica and the mission and what we do as any of the volunteers that we have, and whether they're volunteer employees or even, you know, all the volunteers that we have on the calls and our committees and our boards and the people that call into these, you know, town halls and ask questions. Everybody's committed. I mean, staff members have been at some of these stations for 30, 40 years. You know, they're extremely committed to not only supporting the mission of Pacifica, but also, you know, continuing to get paid and put food on the table for their families. So there is a buy-in with the staff, but it's just a matter of, you know, do they want to raise the membership? Yeah, of course, they would love to raise the fee. Do they want to be able to diversify funding revenue and with outside sources or community partnerships? Yes, of course they do. But we also need the full support and buy-in of a board who's willing to say, you know what, it's time that we raise that membership rate, or it's time that we really put an effort into marketing who we are. And yeah, it was a big hit when we lost certain programmers at KPFK. It was also a big hit when we lost a program director and a news director and a business manager at KPFK. So a lot of the key personnel at some of the stations have been let go, and that has taken a substantial hit. But also when you see that you're losing donors and members because of a program, then that's when you really rally together and you try to say, okay, what can we do to replace that person? Or what can we do to replace that programming need that obviously we're missing in that community, rather than just, you know, saying, okay, well, now let's just get rid of a bunch of staff. And then, you know, I mean, there's no program director. There's no, you know, news director. There's no news department. We are recently now bringing in a local news station from a college that's going to be coming in and providing us with the news, local news. But, you know, we're doing really, as could we do better? Yes, of course. But a lot of the staff is doing as much as they can, already, you know, working at halftime hours, but they're halftime pay, but kind of being expected to work full-time hours.
All right. Chris, let me take your question. Then I want to sort of transition into talking. We'll keep on this conversation, of course. I want to transition into what Heather will talk about in terms of what happened at the programming committee, which relates to this discussion. Go on, Chris.
Okay, yeah, it's just a follow-up based on that very last discussion point, and that's, I've been wondering this for a while, what percentage of our membership are $25 members? In other words, you know, we've been talking about this as if it's a serious problem, and it probably is, but are we talking about 2% of our membership, or are we talking about 20% of our membership that is at that lowest tier of membership donation for the organization?
Hmm. Does anybody know the answer to that?
I don't know the specific number, but I know that at KPFK, it's probably more than 75%. We have some donors that give an annual or a monthly donation of 25 cents.
Wow.
There's at least 300 to 400 people that give 25 cents a month.
Okay, now I see why you think this is a serious problem. Okay, thank
Correct.
You.
Yeah. This is James.
Go on. Beth is before you, Jim.
Okay, go ahead.
Come on, Beth.
Yeah, thank you. First, I want to take just a moment to thank Alex for calling a spade and naming the dynamic driving the drop in membership at K. We're very much in the throes of that sabotage. And we have yet to find an effective way to deal with it, but we're going to have to. I, for one, am not prepared to give up. But what I actually had my hand up to address was the other half of this agenda item. Initially, you had asked for a report concerning the National Fundraising Task Force. As chair of the National Development Task Force, I'd be prepared to give that report if you want it.
Sure. Sure. Why don't you add to this? Because, again, I wanted also to get into what Heather is going to talk about. And just let me read one of the comments in the chat before you do that, Beth. From Max, it seems higher ups in Pacific are wary of accountability, seeing it as a threat, whereas Business 101 knows making accountability an everyday practice is necessary for any healthy, thriving organization. Accountability is only to be feared by underperforming incumbents and their supporters, yes. And then calling for workers' pay and performance, for example, or private. And then later in this, the issue is raised by Chris about the membership and its relationship to financing. I'll have myself comments on that to say, but why don't you do your little report on the development issues?
Sure. The National Development Task Force was created April 3, 2020, by a PND resolution without opposition. As stated in that resolution, the mandate of the National Development Task Force is to assist the management of the Pacifica Foundation in raising funds and increasing membership and report back to the PND as to its progress. Membership in this task force is voluntary and open to anyone who wishes to contribute to it. We meet monthly and report directly to the PNB, both verbally and in writing, at every regular PNB meeting at the beginning of each month, announcing each upcoming meeting and inviting PNB participation. Though directors new to the PNB this year have yet to take part, several senior PNB directors are among the more than 20 regular participants who demonstrate long-term commitment to the task force mission. Local OSB members, staff members, and a number of local station members, also take part regularly, as well as some who attend only to listen, at least for the time being. Former PFW Director Nancy Sorden chaired the task force from its inception until August 2021, at which point I was asked to chair and then elected without opposition to do so. Pacifica Executive Director Stephanie Wells has taken part in every task force meeting since January of this year when she was first brought on board, for which we're grateful. Her extensive previous experience with development is especially useful. We meet monthly to review a wide array of potential revenue streams and focus in depth on the more promising at any given time, including growing listenership, growing membership, growing donations, enhancing credibility by addressing our documentation on Charity Navigator and GuideStar and getting our audits and budgets in place and growing revenue and reserves and reforming governance and working towards stability. We work toward growing our major donor base, growing strategic planning, grants, including public service grants, FEMA grants, which could be huge, foundation grants once we get our act more together and repair our reputation, valuing volunteers. The IRS values the volunteer hour in California at about $35 an hour now, for which we could be getting credit if we tracked our hours. Also, e-commerce, underwriting, monetizing podcasts, growing local fundraising committees, live events, experiences, as it's called out here, such as whale watching or river walking or other such activities, and other possibilities, including NFTs, private placement bonds, or we're still looking for ideas. We're open to ideas. We take time to hear from successful local initiatives and encourage others elsewhere to replicate such success. We work to identify and address any limiting factors. The task force has been especially useful in beginning to knit together a network of people from across the country with a common commitment and a growing skill set to put at the service of Pacifica. Much of the work of development takes place one-on-one, out of the spotlight, where more candid conversations are possible. The most effective development initiatives spring from relationships built over time on common ground with common interests, establishing a basis of trust. We work with that as our long-term objective. That's basically an overview of the task force and what we do. It's the development task force, not fundraising. We meet. Our next meeting is next Monday at 5:30. It's posted on the KPFTX, and anyone who wants more information is, I would encourage them please to contact me. Be happy to talk with you. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Beth. And there's a back and forth in the chat about the issue of the membership decline that Alex cited. Some are disagreeing with it. Others are saying that the issue was stated by Stephanie, that there's a drop of donors. My two cents about this is we've lost almost 70% of our listener members since 2000. So there's a grander problem to have to grapple with than just simply what just happened this year, although I do think it is interesting that these issues are raised and that we've had a static growth in terms of our listener membership compared to what we could have had for the past 5 to 6 years with Trump as president. Let me bring Sue for a second. Beth, you wanted to add some more comments to this? Excuse me? Beth, give your hand up. Still?
No, actually, no, I didn't. I can't tell from my screen whether it's still up or not.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Before I bring you in, Stephanie, just call on me before, and then I'm going to go into the issue of the programming committee stuff. Go on, caller News Report.
This is Sue. There's no 25 cents per month. It's got to be a mistake. It's got to be a mistake. Terry won't even take a $5 a month sustainer because it's almost nullifies itself with the credit card bank charges. So if somebody wants to give $5 a month, we tell them to please mail it in every month to the station. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, Stephanie, any comments on what you've just heard before we move into the next phase?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. So, Heather, why don't you describe, because this, of course, interrelates to what we've been talking about in terms of listener members, programming. Programming, of course, at this point, someone could correct me, it's generally, what, 80 to 85% of the revenue stream. Is that correct, Julia and Stephanie, our listener member donors? Is that percentage of the gross of money we bring in, 80 to 85%?
That comes from listener donors?
Yeah. Of our entire revenue that we get, the bulk of it has been from listener donations.
Yes.
Is that correct?
I would say it's even higher than 80%. Yeah. I mean, I can pull our, I can pull the budget.
It's easily that.
So we're talking about 90% perhaps.
Probably.
At least.
Yeah.
Well,
okay. Yeah, because, you know, any sort of nonprofit or not even a companies in general, you need to diversify your revenue stream because if one of them starts to drop, you're in trouble.
Absolutely. All right. So, yeah, Chris, one comment. Go on, Chris.
Yeah, I was just going to say the historical number, I believe, is 85%.
85%. Okay. And we know that this number, if I analyze the CUMS, the weekly amount of people listening to each station, I get the numbers of around a little over 300,000 if you add up all the weekly tunes. And that what I mean by that is the amount of people that actually tune into the station. It doesn't mean it's different people. I know in New York, I've estimated that the actual number of people listening to the station is between 40 to 50,000 as opposed to 60 to 80,000 tuning in. So the demographics are also, in certain cases, baby boomers, aging baby boomers. Although I know in New York, I know the statistics in New York pretty carefully, there's a growth of, because there's a growth in the Arbitron and Nielsen ratings there, there is a larger spike in millennials. I don't know if Bertel's on this phone call, but there's a larger spike of those groups. But we still have a problem of the fact that the only way to really survive is we need to get up to about, I think, at least 200,000 people per week listening to each station, which means a doubling or tripling of the amount of audience, and then at least we wouldn't be having these ridiculous fights about money. But let me have Heather introduce what happened at the programming committee, and I wanted to bring up some other ideas that were sparked by it. So, Heather, take it away.
Oh, thanks so much, Jim. So our meeting took place on the 9th, and it was just excellent. Actually, I was so thrilled with this. So what I'm going to do is quickly summarize. I have a listing of some of the things that were discussed, and we can go from there. So one of the things is we should probably be listening to each other's news so that we get an idea of what's out there. And that may give us some kind of an idea of what would be useful to move ahead. We need more international news connections and reporting as regarding the affiliates and with the Ukraine program. I don't know if you all, if everybody's heard about that, we can share more about that as well. And we need to strengthen local news at all stations. We need to establish local news departments. We need better communication between all the Pacifica stations on news, et cetera, and coordination between all the stations. We need news stringers outside the mainstream press, as in to get more information about progressive entities in our communities. We need a marketing plan for the news. We need to be more attentive and broader with issues to include, for example, agricultural labor. We need ideas for timing. 1 hour news, 30 minutes of local news from all five stations and also from the affiliates. And then 15 minutes of national news and continuous on international news. We need more Spanish speaking shows. We need to be more attentive to news to get out immediately, as in Roe v. Wade, the Roe v. Wade notice prior to the Supreme Court decision. We need a nationwide Pacifica producer repository for news content so that people can share these things together. Anyway, the point is, I was so incredibly impressed at the meeting that we had. We had folks from all the stations. And what impressed me also about folks who were participating is that they were, a lot of them, of course, most of them were producers themselves. But they had not just local and national, but they also had a lot of them international experience in news. We have a remarkable cadre of folks with expertise. My voice is going on me tonight. I apologize. So, it sort of laid the basis for a lot that we can do to move forward on some of this. So, Jim, I don't know what else you want to share, but we could have a discussion if you like. Go ahead. Jim?
I need to unmute myself. I wanted to share that the meeting that we had, for example, to set up the national task fundraising group was very, very exciting and very encouraging. In a way, I would probably want to declassify that tape so that it could be listened to everybody, because I think it was actually very exciting to hear everybody get together and talk. One of the things I wanted to raise is the issue of local programming, local news programming. I've been going to conferences here in New York, in the J schools at Knight Ridder for the past 10 to 15 years, and all they do is complain about the collapse of local news programming. This is a national phenomenon throughout the United States, not dissimilar from all of us knowing about this. We've seen it's in print, the collapse of print, the solidification of national news trends, if you will. And there's been some amazing initiatives around the country to do local news. So that's one thing that I think needs to be stressed. What also came out of the meeting in retrospect was the question of what to do about the different kinds of programming in the grids that don't work. We're well aware of the fact that large numbers of the shows in the grids perform unevenly, to say the least. So, for example, in different markets, public affairs shows do not make money. Why? And Spanish language programming is uneven, to say the least. In the case of KPFK, I looked at the stats of KPFK, and they have very few people listening to the shows, and they don't make much money. Now, does that say one has to toss it out the window? Of course not. One has to figure out how to make it better. Music programming is particularly good in Houston and in Washington. We know that a large percent of the revenue raised in those stations comes from music shows. Well, why don't we all get the music programmers together, like we've been doing with these different meetings, and say, okay, what can we learn from each other to do a better job? And finally, arts programming. That's always a big bugaboo of mine, because arts programming, as you know, there's a big part of the mission statement has a commitment to the arts. And in my experiences in New York, going to fundraising operations and foundations, maybe 10 to 12 years ago when I was a little younger, more energetic. They were our natural allies, the arts community in any major urban center we're in. And yet we don't exploit that. So one of the things I'd like to get a sense of the body from is that through the programming committee, we encourage and try to get concrete proposals. It's great to get everybody together to gripe and moan and brainstorm, but I like to see concrete things done in terms of news, public affairs. What can we do to spruce that up? Spanish language programming, another issue, and music and arts programming separately to look on as something that the task that the strategic planning committee considers part of what we're here, because the bulk of our money comes from listener members. So if we're failing to resonate with them, why? And an idea that came up yesterday when we were having a fundraising discussion in New York City at WBAI was the question of, doing national shows not just for fundraising purposes, okay, because we could do fundraising light. But look at the January 6th hearings going on right now, a perfect opportunity for all the stations to cooperate. I could see the theme could be rather blatantly stated. Are we heading to fascism? And I don't say that rhetorically. I'm a historian, so I'm very precise about using those terms. And I don't like to throw that around frivolously. But it's a no-brainer that people talk about this. I've been watching the Academy react to this for the past 5 years. So I think that we could do things on a national level and cooperate with each other. And we don't have to, fundraise the hell out of it, but do that in between the things we're doing. Serve what is important to the people's needs right now. An all-day of national thing on inflation, something that's useful to inform people. But anyway, those are the kind of things that are coming out listening about this. And Heather did a great job, and it was terrific to get all these people together. So, again, this sort of goes right into what we've just been talking about, the question of programming. It's my opinion that the amount of the programming essentially needs to be renovated, overhauled, revolutionized, if you will. And we really have to think about our mass audiences in every metro market. It doesn't make sense to think that we're going to just market what we're doing to a small amount of people. I think we have to be thinking about a mass audience, and I think we can do it. We have the ability to do it in ways that nobody else can. All right, I'll shush right now. Any comments about the program initiatives? None. I'm stunned.
Well, Jim, I do want to say that there's a hand up there. I do want to say that what impressed me about this meeting was the desire and the interest in having more of a collaborative effort across all the stations. That was very impressive, and I can see us going in that direction. Anyway, thank you.
Right, and I think also everybody, and Julia Kennard said that list would need to be run. What are you talking about here, Julia, about the this is in the chat here. You guys are talking about fundraising? Oh, about the issue of how much money comes per year per person. Okay, well, we'll keep getting to that in a second. Yes, go on, Beth. Elizabeth, you have your hand up?
I found a few bookstores near you. The first at 131 Alexander. The second one was Revolution Books at 437 Malcolm X Boulevard, New York. Noble at 2200.
Sorry, that's Siri going off. Go on, Beth. Any comments? I can't believe it. We've dazzled everybody into silence too much. Beth, Elizabeth, you have a comment. You have to unmute.
She may not really have her hand up. She can't when her hand
you.
Is up.
Thank you. Thank you.
Actually, I was muted on your end. I finally figured that out. So I'm here. And
okay. Yeah,
I'm
go
ready.
On.
Thank you. I chair the Programming Oversight Committee at KPFK, and I've got to tell you, we are out of options for any immediate significant change. We've had no PD for 18 months. There's no functional GM on site. There's a skeleton crew running things, trying to keep us on air. We've been told that when I asked how do people submit ideas for new programming, I was told effectively shovel-ready programming only. They were not in a position to produce anything. If it's not ready to air, they can't help us. So we can submit pilots or anything that's ready to go, nothing more than that. At this point, but dealing with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we're asking the question day to day, can we even keep the signal on the air? We're not able to produce anything. So that's a real dilemma. At the Programming Oversight Committee yesterday, I asked everybody to identify their top and bottom 10% of our programming so that what would they be most prepared to fight for and what would they be most prepared to let go. And that was in part to try to help people at the station identify what we might be in a position to remove or replace that would produce less of a hustle, less of a fight than other things. Because it's clear, it's like there's no question that we have to change. That's just obvious. The question is how, and everybody has different opinions about it. And right now we are completely out of resources for dealing with that. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a pretty, yeah, that's quite sobering. Any comments by anybody else on this? Well, the purpose of, just to interject here, the purpose of these meetings that we're having, go on, Susan.
Yeah. So I apologize. This isn't about this, but I am wondering whether it would be appropriate to come out of this committee or maybe National Finance a recommendation about the about raising the minimum membership. I think having real information station by station about what levels, what percent are in at different levels would be extremely helpful. But that is something that's clearly identified on this meeting as being a non-sustainable structure. And I know, Jim, you have brought up the question that we have to increase listenership. That's probably the most essential. But we also have to look at what the funding, what the dollars per person who's willing to step up can generate. And I know sometimes people are willing to pay more. They just haven't been asked.
Yeah, good point. I know that one thing we want to do here in New York is start to directly call the people who have stopped subscribing and find out and learn from them why. This is something I did with Mr. Sagerton and others a few years ago, and I think it's time to go back and do that again. Because you really can learn a lot from these kind of conversations with people. They have to be open-ended, combination focus group, thank you for supporting us and all that, but it has to be, also to get some concrete information as to what we're doing wrong. Why did you stop supporting us? What can we do to make it better for you? And I think if we were doing a lot of that right now, that would be one little bit of helping. There's no silver bullets. There has to be lots of multiple income streams coming at once. In any event, any other comments about this by others? All right. I just want to get a sense of the body. The programming committee is going to obviously, Heather, you're going to have another meeting about this pretty soon with all the folks.
Absolutely.
All right. And I was just wondering if people feel that we should do similar things that we're doing here with the programming committee that could look at these problem areas of the programming. I mean, it's just like, I'm, as I said before, like I usually don't get into this, but mi madre es cubana y España. So I'm part Spanish myself. And I do find the programming, it's to me just like, what can we do to make it better? Because we know all the areas we're in have large amounts of Hispanics, Hispanic Americans, and folks from all over Central America, South America, et cetera. So what are we not doing to communicate with them? Why is so few people listening, et cetera? I know in New York it's handled differently, but in Los Angeles, it's a strip. And someone pointed out to me it's not fair to just isolate that as a problem, and they're right, because we have lots of other shows that don't do well either. So the whole question is, what can we do to make them better? And one thing we can learn from KPFA is that they have had sound programs to train producers before they even got on the air. And Chris can back me up on this. I've talked to Frank. I've talked to all sorts of people in Berkeley about that. And that is a big, big, big difference, I think, to train people. You don't just put somebody on a mic and let's, hey, go to it, guy. Anyway, all right, so can I get a sense of the body just as, you know, I'll just say, you know, there's no disagreement from anybody that this is something important for us to pursue. I myself and Heather would do this as one thing we would do to sort of get this spurred on. Is there any opposition, any, I just want to get a sense of the body of what people feel about this. All right, hearing none, we'll continue to do that. Now, let me move to the next item. And of course, the folks that are coming on the call, you're listening to the Strategic Planning Committee, Tuesday, July 9th, 19th. We're having a pretty robust argument in the chat here about all sorts of issues, which I'll get to in a minute. But why don't we have an update on the underwriting? And the reason I wanted to have both Alex, Lyndon, Chris, Beth could chime in because she's been working about this too a long time, is that underwriting has been quite controversial for years. We all know this. So Alex, Lyndon, and Chris, and Elizabeth, you guys just jump in and you pick up where you think we should go. What's your thoughts about the underwriting issue? I know the board just passed a motion essentially saying let's go for this stuff. So what do you guys, however, or do you want to talk about in terms of the underwriting?
Do you want me to say something?
Go on, Alex.
Okay, well, the Strategic Planning Committee has actually been discussing underwriting since its inception, really, and that was back in 2018. We never got to the point where we felt comfortable bringing a motion to the board for all kinds of reasons that I won't go into now. But in the course of all those discussions, we did do a lot of research and we got a lot of information about the subject, and being given the current financial situation, I think this is the time where we really need to move ahead with some form of restricted underwriting. I don't think we need to take a lot of time to do that. I sent out some basic material for the committee to look at, was it 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I forget. I think at this point, what we need is a policy for Pacifica for a restricted form of underwriting, and that policy should have a built-in mechanism for oversight and for review of progress. And I don't think it's something we want to impose on any station where the station itself overwhelmingly does not want it, but we could certainly allow those stations that do want to try it as at least as an experiment or as a pilot project. I think we should let them go ahead with that. But we need a policy and we need some oversight, because with underwriting, there are some possible gains and there are also some dangers. And the dangers being, if we violate certain FCC rules about underwriting, we could be in a lot of trouble. So we have to formulate a very carefully thought out policy. And before we actually implement such policy, it should be vetted by our FCC attorneys, and then we should be ready to go. So I think we should get make a resolution to get something before this committee within the next 2 weeks or so. I'll be willing to work on it. If anybody else wants to work on it with me, that's fine. Whoever wants to, please let me know. And we need to bring something before this committee, and And once it gets through this committee, we need to bring it to the board.
Sounds good to me. All right, Chris, go on, Chris.
Yes. I was actually going to pick up some of the slack that that Alex left here, speaking to the issue of why underwriting has not been a particularly popular issue with the in the organization. And I think a lot of it has to do with framing. People kind of have an intuitive sense of what underwriting means. And in the general sense, it means, you know, corporate backing of an entity which is like vehemently anti-corporate in our case. And so, you know, it never really held that much muster with the organization. And I think both strategic planning and development, various development personnel throughout the organization have kind of eschewed this idea, kind of kicked it aside because of this sort of perceptive hurdle that has to be overcome. And so I think framing the underwriting and restricting it, limiting it to businesses like, for example, that are closely associated with us in terms of mission. We are a business, after all. Businesses that are associated with us in terms of missions would be, you know, a wise thing to do. And I think Alex is right. I think the time has long since come for this, and it would be good to bring it forward while the opportunity still exists.
All right, Heather.
Yes, so here at our station in Atlanta, we of course do underwriting, but I need to say that my whole conceptual framework, and I'm probably repeating myself with some of the board members here, but most of you know that most of my work has been in cooperative economic development with the Federation of Southern Cooperatives. I was director of communications for like 25 years and working with farmers across the South, and they form their own cooperatives, right, as a way of generating income for their work in their communities. But the thing is, we're supposed to be community radio stations, and in that we are community radio stations, we need to understand that an important integral part of the communities where we live are small businesses. So for me, this means that we could provide the opportunity to support the small businesses in our communities. We could have more dialogue about the details about all this, but I think I'm just thrilled that Pacifica is choosing to do this. So thank you, Jim.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's a long time overdue. Sue.
Yeah, I understood that this was a part of what the Strategic Planning Committee had been looking at and that the Development Committee had been looking at. And I went and reached out to Ursula Rudenberg, where there is a great deal of expertise across the affiliates. And so put together the motion that was adopted basically with one abstention or one opposition. And it was seconded by Heather for charging the executive director with developing policies and procedures. And I think the knowledge that is, you know, in this committee is extremely useful to that. I know Heather and Ursula and I all had the concept that underwriting should be a public service, not just a revenue mechanism, and that it's a way of showcasing people, resources, activities in our listener areas, in the areas that we serve. So I think well-crafted policies not only address the critical SCC requirements and any other legal requirements, but should provide a guide to those stations that opt to exercise this option to do so. And I know Dr. Franklin, who recently left our station because we ran out of money, and tonight Julia Kennard said we aren't sure we can make payroll at KPFT. That was something that he had wanted us to take a look at, and our staff has already taken a look at it. We will be delighted if the national standards come forward drawing on the resources on this committee to be able to help us all launch that in the best way.
All right. I would propose that we do a meeting like we did with the national, just let me, because this is a no-brainer. We do something like we did with the National Fundraising Task Force as soon as possible and bring in Ursula, bring in Elizabeth, bring in Alex, Lyndon, everybody who has expertise on this, and hammer it out and move forward and get something accomplished. I'd say within a week, next week. I would propose that we do this within a week. Because this issue has been talked about, argued about for weeks and weeks and weeks. I know in New York we're actually implementing something with a essentially plain Department of Transportation safety, car safety things, which to me is a no-brainer and got us additional revenue. So this is something we should do. Jim, go on, Jim. Sorry.
Okay. About underwriting, I just want to say and I'm going to say some things again that people have heard before, some of the people on this call, but at WBAI and at KPFK and sometimes at other stations, we do long infomercial sounding segments of, you know, appealing for funds. And it basically sounds like an infomercial for an hour at a time. And if you compare that to underwriting, which is a 10, a 20, a 30 second little blurbs saying, you know, this is Three Sisters Organic Restaurant down the block that supports this programming on the specific radio station. And then you have a show for an hour instead of an hour of that infomercial sounding stuff. That would be a huge improvement in our air. So I used to think, you know, nothing is worse than underwriting except the solution. And in fact, that's kind of where we are, but maybe underwriting can actually be better than where we are in terms of this infomercial sounding stuff that we're doing. So that's number one. I think Heather has a beautiful way of expressing this. She says that underwriting is part of supporting, excuse me, Heather, for taking your words here. I hope I don't botch too badly, but you say that underwriting is a beautiful way of supporting the community that we're part of. We're supposed to be community radio. Underwriting supports the community. So, you know, again, it's not, you know, like you see on public television. It's not a Mercedes cornering around on a city street saying this is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. It's Three Sisters Restaurant, whatever it happened, whatever the case may be. I also wanted to say that in this meeting, we're getting a lot of repetition of little talking points that people have made, and the strategic planning committee is restricted to directors. There's no delegate members of this committee. And I think, you know, we're supposed to do strategic planning, which is long range, mid range, short range. We're focusing on short range now because we're in a crisis. We're in a cash flow crisis in the network. So we're doing short range planning, but this shouldn't be a miniature version of a PNB meeting. It shouldn't be a variety show of, you know, what's the latest current events or what are people talking about at Pacifica. I hope in the future that the chair is calling for, but I hope to see in actuality in the future, we go to working meetings, making these things happen, doing the work, not just talk, 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 repeating a lot of points we've all made elsewhere, we've all heard elsewhere. You know, maybe the public hasn't heard all of this, but certainly we have. Let's get down to the work of making this stuff happen. That's all. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jim. And I felt when I put forth the idea of having the, you know, working with the programming committee to actually isolate elements of what our sound is, to sit there and put people together. And that's a lot of work to do. Heather and I both know that. That's actually what you're talking about. And then actually to talk about the underwriting, I would just propose, I don't think any of us disagree with this. Let's have a concrete meeting in the next week or so. And, I don't, you know, Alex, you could think about, your time and everybody else's schedule and bring Ursula and everybody else in and let's get this going. Anyway, Jim. Mr. McFadden.
Yeah, I've been sitting here thinking about this, and I've been against underwriting, you know, since I first joined the board, and I still have a lot of concerns about it. But what occurred to me just now in listening to this discussion, that maybe what we really should be doing is, besides developing a plan, is we should be asking our listener members. And if we can set up a poll where listener members can log in, you know, that and voice their opinion, you know, whether they disfavor, whether they favor, you know, underwriting as an alternative to endless fundraising drives, you know, there might be a favor, you know, people might like that, and maybe even offer a plan or two about how it might actually be implemented, and if those are acceptable. But I think rather than us, you know, a handful of us trying to figure it all out and then just get, you know, maybe when we get a little bit further into this, we ought to really have some kind of way to poll our listener members. And, you know, and part of the question might be, are you willing to up your donation so we don't have to do this? And really get a sense of what our members really think on this subject.
That's great, Jim. And just to mention something that happened in that task force meeting, one of our colleagues acting with initiative in one of the stations was able to raise, I think, over $100,000 following those things. I'm positive we have in our audiences small business members who would be supportive of the station, bookstores. If I was living in the Bay Area and Cody's bookstore was still there, I would head straight up to Cody's bookstore and ask that guy to help support KPFA, which he did in many, many ways when he was alive, the owner of that great bookstore that's no longer there. Heather, go on.
Yeah, I just want to mention, as far as James and Fadden, as far as listeners' responses are concerned, years ago, this woman, I was somewhere in the city of Atlanta, this woman came up to me and she said, "Oh, Heather, I'm eternally grateful to WRFG, because were it not for WRFG, I would never have known about this small restaurant in East Atlanta," just using that as an example. Anyway, the point is, I could go on forever about this, I think, but it's important, I think, for all of us to realize that small businesses in our communities are an integral part of our communities, and they should be respected in countless ways. But I know there's criteria and so forth that needs to be considered, but that's all part of the process. But I think underwriting is very important.
Yeah. Well, I'm just curious, the sense of the body, if we have a meeting in a week, a working group, as Mr. Sagerton was suggesting, but we open it up to a whole bunch of different people. Is everybody sort of down for that? Yeah, go on, Beth.
Yeah, that's not the way I work. First, I book up. My next week is already solidly booked. And that's not the way I compose. So I've been looking for I remembered the material Alex sent. I haven't been able to put my finger on it yet, but I'll find it. And I need time to digest that. I do want to be part of the process where we have input, but just a free for all, seat of the pants off the top of our head, free for all, doesn't appeal to me. I'm sorry.
All right. Other comments? I wasn't talking about a free-for-all. I was talking about something that would actually get something concretely done. But I hear what you're saying, Elizabeth. Susan.
Yeah, I agree with Elizabeth. I think we need a drafting session. And that we've already tasked the executive director to develop policies and procedures. That might be a place where we can kind of chew on them and say, have all the necessary things been taken into account, or bring forward ones that issues that we already have. I know that I got a whole package from Ursula of of things that they use, I forget which station, but the station which she has represented. So I think that there are some good models, but I think we need a drafting session, and the kind of session that you had with programmers about, you know, really getting to the meat of what sort of news we would hope to see around the network. I think it's similar, a similar issue with underwriting.
All right, Alex and Lyndon and Chris, what are your thoughts?
Jim, could you stop sharing the screen? Because it's like...
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, it was really like... I'm not sure exactly what you have in mind, but I think it has to be members of this committee. It's not... I'm not proposing any free-for-all. And we could get, you know, those who want to participate in this, we can, I'm thinking of a small group, four or five people at most. And we could schedule our first meeting. You can call it a drafting session, I suppose. we could call our first meeting anytime in the next couple of weeks, whatever is convenient for most people.
All right. Is Elizabeth, is that more in line with what you think would be the best way to proceed?
It's at least something I can consider.
Okay.
Yeah, it gives me hope of, I mean, there's just no way I could take part. This is already our second meeting this month, and there's no way I could.
All right.
There are two other meetings I'm not at tonight in order to do this one.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, I hear you. Alex, do you want to organize that? Do you want to take responsibility to organize that meeting?
I'll send out a note to the entire committee, and those who wish to participate will, and we'll take it from there.
All right, hopefully Ursula will be involved too, because she has a...
Yeah.
All right.
Certainly.
Yeah, Jim, go on, Jim. Mr. Sagerton.
Yeah, I just want to offer one word, subcommittee.
Okay, fine.
It can be done by subcommittee, so you don't have to have a whole committee meeting. You
all right.
Figure out who's interested in what, sort them out.
Right.
Assign the different people to the different tasks. They go off and do the work, make their own schedule, bring it back to the group.
All right, fine. So whoever wants to
work
with Alex on this subject, go work with him on that. Heather and myself are going to be dealing with this programming issue. You can come join us. And I guess that would be it. Are there any other comments for tonight? Do we need to go to executive session or not? Probably not. Would that be the sense of the body? Have we exhausted ourselves at this point? Is there any new business to bring up? Again, I'm overwhelmed by the resounding roar.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Oh, boy. Thank you, Susan. All right. Well, anyway, all right. So thank you. And I want to thank everybody for participating. Thank everybody getting on the call. Thank you, Max. It was good to see your chat comments there. Thank you. And we will get the subcommittees in action and get stuff accomplished. Thank you so much and good night, everybody. Does everybody agree on the adjournment issue?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you, Steph. Bye-bye. Thank you, Max.